tell that story. I'm Debbie, I'm an alcoholic drug addict.
Hi, Debbie.
And I'm so grateful to be clean and sober and standing here in a meeting of Cocaine Anonymous, feeling so much energy and fun and love. And I love that we did the gratitude, the sobriety countdown. Just brings so much joy. The theme tonight of joy of living, that's it. You know, celebrate each day. And now that we're clean and sober, we got a lot of living to do. Yeah?
Yeah.
So welcome to the people who are new. And it's so great to see some faces I haven't seen in a while. Ooh, it was kind of random, you know, when I got the call from Lewis saying, did you come speak? And I love CA Milwaukee. I love this fellowship. I love Cocaine Anonymous. But I've always really enjoyed coming up here, so thank you. It feels like home. I'm flooded with memories, you know, hearing some of the readings and in fact, when I was asked about a month ago or so, my anniversary was coming up. My sobriety date is March 25th, 1985. And I encourage you who don't know your sobriety date to pick one. Take a date. It's a gift. It is yours. We don't throw gifts away. We keep them, we take care of them, and we treasure them. And it took me, and when I saw the person stand up for 90 days, that was the hardest thing for me to get because I had to do it twice. those memories just flood through me. And I will tell you, though, my story is my story, so, you know, I can't lie. You know, I'm going to tell you my story. For me, this addict, I was born an addict. That's just for me. That's the way I believe it is to be, for me. I was just born this way. I'm a little restless, I'm a little irritable, and a little discontented. That's the way I am. And so nobody made me that way. However, in thinking about my life, I've become very aware of a certain amount of shame and not being enough, not measuring up, that is just in me, you know? I don't know that it was caused by anything particular. You know, both my parents were around, I grew up in a college town, though. There was a lot of drinking going on, but I don't know. I don't remember my first drink. I know I had one. But I do remember my first hit of cocaine. You know, that is what triggered me. And it drove all that shame and that not being enough and not feeling good about myself. It disappeared with cocaine. So I started drinking when I was somewhere in around 7th grade, and pot. And I grew up in the East Coast in the country, college town. Nothing striking. I was always a really good student. Remember that not being enough thing? Yeah. So I was working really, really hard. I'm a hard worker, and did really well in high school despite all of that. And sort of fast forward. It was in college that I tried cocaine, and I don't know, it just changed things for me. You know, there were some things, I'll back up just for a second, that I did that actually did cause further shame. I remember getting picked up for shoplifting, and I would shoplift things like, you know those, I'm dating myself here, the LPs. Yeah, I shoplifted those. I don't know. I didn't get picked up for that one. I got that one. I'm a clever addict. But it was the one where my mom came to pick me up. And I felt ashamed, you know. College, I went to a school. I got an early decision. So my last year of high school was just like a blur. I have no idea. I didn't need to work. I just had fun. I was captain of the ski team. Really athletic, smart, you know, it was life was good. It was kind of easy then. When that tray went around the room in college, and I knew that was it, and that was it. You know, I didn't stop. I didn't know how to stop. You know, I went back to my school. This was at another different college that I did this. I went back to school and I found it. You know, addicts know how to find it. And it started this cycle where I don't know where I was going to get my next one. I just had to make sure I got my next one. And somehow, miraculously, I graduated college. And I went to New York City. And this is where things started to do, you know, that kind of spiral downward, you know. And I will say that while things were going, you know, I felt sort of normal drinking and drugging in high school and just hanging out and normal. That was normal. There was a little disconnect going on. Well, actually a big disconnect. I always felt connected to a spirit, let's call it. Like something that I could pray to. I used to pray before my ski races that I would remember the course. there was like this little bit of faith in something outside of myself, and I had that. But when I went to New York City and started to just be overwhelmed, that spirit got really dim, really dim. I remember arriving in New York City, I had no clue. I had no money. I didn't have a job. I didn't, you know, have an apartment. I didn't really know what to do, but I'm a survivor. You know, I'm an addict. I'm clever. I got a roommate. You know, and I'm an egomaniac also. So my idea of a job was I was going to work at Sotheby Park Renee, which is a very prestigious art auction place. Well, apparently you actually have to know someone to even get an interview. So I got a job with Gray Direct Advertising, and I went to that job. Unfortunately, the first day after I tried Freebase, that dates me too, doesn't it? So I had been snorting and such before, but that Freebase, I went to the job my first day, and I couldn't wait to get out of there and go back to that house and get some more of that Freebase. And guess what? I never went back to that job. You know, and it was a pretty good job. I had to start over. I found another one. I was working for a broadcasting company. My boss was an alcoholic. We went out for lunch, drinking, you know. And I made just enough money to start my little freebasing habit. Well, you don't last very long. And somehow I had this, don't ask me how I did it. But remember, I'm clever. I'm an addict. I have resources. I have a mouth. And I had an apartment, which was a studio apartment, which means the ground level, on East 57th Street in New York City. Yeah. I don't think you could afford, you know, there's no way I could afford that today. But this addict, picture, cockroaches going up the wall, eviction notice on the door, and what am I doing? I'm sitting there with my bowl of beautiful, you know how the little crystals, like if you get the chemicals just right when you freebase your cocaine, it sparkles, right? And I'm just like looking at this stuff. And all I can think about is doing that. I had a crock pot full of chicken stew or some such. It just sat outside for days. And I'm just doing my free days. Well, one thing I neglected to mention, you know that little shoplifting habit I had? Well, that Stewart Broadcasting Company, the drunk that I worked for, he didn't really notice right away just how much I was actually taking out of the company to get my cocaine so that I could freebase. That's when that whole cycle kept going downward and downward. Long story short, there I am. Lower Manhattan, in jail, overnight, waiting for the courts. My dad came to bail me out, thank God, because I definitely didn't feel like I belonged there. You know, I was being, I don't even remember the harassing. it's like out of my mind. It was so painful, demoralizing, and somehow I worked it out with the probation officer that, okay, I'm going to get a new start, a new job, and I promise not to do that again. No way. And I did that for a while. A new job, I stayed there, it was a really good employee. I was a secretary to a secretary, and I didn't care. I was just going to not do that stuff again because it was grand larceny at that point. Well, the boss of that company called me in one day and said, you know, you're doing a great job. We actually need somebody out in Chicago. The boss out there, the branch out there needs a secretary, and you seem like you're the perfect fit. And I thought, you know what, perfect. I didn't even report to my probation officer, and I took the job and left. I don't think you're supposed to do that. But that's how I got here, to Chicago, anyway. And it was, you know, I moved to Chicago about when I was 22. You know, vowing, having that we talked about in the literature somewhere, like, I'm never going to do it again. Well, addicts need to, well, me, I was all of a sudden in a new city. It was a nice new start. I love Chicago. It's friendly, it's open, it's cleaner, it's, you know, I got a nice job. I was taking the community work every day. I felt sort of normal, even though I had this shame that it was kind of hiding and this not being enough because I really wasn't getting my shit together and I'd gone and graduated college. Anyway, I don't even recall. It must have been a birthday. I'm big on birthdays. and I thought, yeah, I'll treat myself, right? And that vicious cycle just started again. And this boss that I was working for, he moved his office to so we'd work out of our home. And his home was, I lived in a condo overlooking Lake Michigan, and his condo was on the other side of the building. And so it was kind of convenient. I got up and went to work. I didn't have to go anywhere. It was right there in my living room. And if I needed anything to do with work, I just called him or he came down. It was fine. So it became very easy. Oh, and guess what? Yeah, there was a dealer in the room too. I mean, in the building. So I literally didn't have to go anywhere. I don't even remember. It went on like this for a while. How many months and years I went on like that. But I do know that my bottom, I will never forget. Again, I was sitting on the floor. This time there was no eviction notice, but I was rocking back and forth. I can literally envision and feel it in my body. There was blood coming out of every part of my body. Yeah, my nose, up everywhere. And I was scared. I didn't know what to do. All I knew was my boss was going to the bank the next morning to find out what happened to over $10,000. Now that's a little different than grand larceny, which is, I think, that's $1,500. It might have changed. I didn't know what to do. What do you do, you know? What it was like, what happened. I got down on my knees. For some reason, I went from rocking, and I rolled right over to my knees, and I asked that spirit. I said, God, please help me, because I don't know what to do. And I still didn't know what to do. And nothing really dramatic happened. And I faced the consequences. You know? He called me the next morning from the bank, and I told, for the first time in my life, I got honest. I said, yeah, I did that. And he, at the time, he was almost like a surrogate father to me. He lived up there, he was close. He said, I'm going to help you. And he sent me to a shrink. I thought, that must be what I need. I need a shrink. Like, nobody normal does this. Nobody, you know, has eviction notice and cockroaches and, you know, nobody does these things. I went to the shrink. When I went to the shrink, I had a little gram in my sock, just in case. Yeah. And then the next, like facing the consequences, was the DEA. Yeah. So the DEA says to me, you know, there's this fellowship that we know about called Cocaine Anonymous. Now, I don't think it's very big, but I think there's a meeting that you can find and go to. Well, that scared me. That really scared me. The boss also insisted that I go to treatment. Now, it's not necessary for everybody, but for me, because I was scared of the DEA, I was scared, I didn't know about this fellowship thing, and I didn't really care for the psychiatrist very much, so I went to treatment. And I remember this one nurse, don't recall her name, but she looked at me and she said, Debbie, it's going to be very, very hard for you. Yeah, it's going to be very hard for you. And I looked at her and that scared me. And I remember going into my room and, you know that big book thing they give you? Put me right to sleep. I haven't slept so good in a long time. And yeah, that's where, when Craig walked in the room, I thought, he can't be a drug addict. His shirt's all tucked in, he's all clean shaven, his hair's all combed over. I didn't even think he was a drug addict. But anyway, we've become more than good friends. Getting out of, I did go to an AA meeting when I was in treatment. And my thought on that was, my dad's the alcoholic. I don't belong here. But I'll go, because I had to go. But then they started a CA meeting. I was like, oh, on a Saturday morning, at the very, I think it was even the very same, I don't even remember, the very same hospital. So when I got out of treatment, I went to that meeting. And that changed my life. Joe D. was speaking, and there were a bunch of patients in the room too, but I think I'd just gotten out. And he said, there's no such thing as a wrong question or a bad question. And he kept talking about gratitude. He had this shit-eating grin on his face, and everybody was laughing, and I was like, what are you guys laughing about? Because my life's falling apart, the DEA is after me, and my boyfriend's gonna break up with me. So I went up after the meeting and I mustered up all the courage I could to, remember I have a mouth, I'm pretty good with that, but it was a little humbling to go up to this, you know, chairperson of the meeting and say, but what do you mean grateful? Because you definitely had something I wanted with that grateful thing. Because at the moment, I was not grateful. And he just looked at me, smug. Keep coming back. Really? That's all you're going to tell me? I was floored. But it's exactly what I needed to hear. So keep coming back. Don't know how that all happened. Like going from asking God for help to, you know, keep coming back. And it's worked. So I am truly grateful for the gift of sobriety, that I have a sobriety date that I take care of on a daily basis. And I could never, ever repay that to Cocaine Anonymous. So when people do ask me, I say yes. So that's why I'm here tonight. And it's been a journey, you know? It's been a joy of living and living. It's not always easy. She was saying that in her lead. I wanted to fit in. Okay, I'm not enough, and I feel still shame about everything I did. So I look at those steps on the wall, that one where it says, made direct amends, that one just, it's like stabbed me in my heart. But fortunately, I found a sponsor. And my very first sponsor, I happened to have spoken with this past week. It was so wonderful to talk with Francine. And she said to me at that very first time when I asked her, she said, Debbie, we will love you until you learn to love yourself. Because obviously I didn't have a clue. And it's true today. I will love you until you can learn to love yourself. Because I have something to give today. Some other memories that kind of flood through me. Getting involved in service. Craig mentioned it. Now, we were a very young fellowship. There was one meeting a week, one meeting a day. So 7 meetings a week. And some of my, I don't recall if I could even get to some of them, but I didn't have a car. In fact, driving up here tonight, Craig said, oh, just like old times, I'm driving you to a meeting. He used to drive me to the meeting. Anyway, so that Saturday morning meeting where I said, what does grateful mean? Even though it's really recommended to have more time, they needed a GSR, and I became a GSR, and I had 3 months, or almost 3 months. And that actually was a blessing, you know, that I had a place to go to be responsible for. But I mentioned it took 290 days for me, and that is because I hadn't surrendered to alcohol. And I went to a baby shower of a very good friend of mine who I grew up with all my life, through high school and everything. And him and Debbie were having a baby. And now, these were my drinking buddies. So what do you bring to a baby shower for your drinking buddies? You bring champagne, of course. And so I arrived at the baby shower. I was sober a few weeks, and close to 90 days, very close to 90 days. And they were all watching some game and drinking beer and all this stuff, and they knew I had been in treatment, and at one point we toasted. We pulled out the champagne and we toasted. And then, nope, I'm not kidding. I don't drink. I don't. Well, they went all back to drinking their beer and watching the game, and this really good bottle of champagne was sitting there, about half full. Like they had only, well, you know, I finished it. So what really got me though, that night, I wanted cocaine. And then I knew, it's the first one. It doesn't matter what it is. It's the first one. And so my sobriety date is that next day, March 25th, 1985. So getting that second 90 days just felt like forever. But I love our chips here. It's like 90, 6 months, 9 months, a year, 18 months. You know, not too many fellowships have that, 18 months. When my sponsor was, when I was about almost 6 months sober, she told me she was moving out of state. And I was devastated. You know, because you know that spirit thing? I know I had prayed, but my higher power was really the groups. That's where I felt good. This is where I was of service. And she was kind of my higher power in a way. And even though I was praying and all, she was moving. So it got me to finish my fifth step. And thank God. So I was like off the fence and into recovery at that point. We got down on our knees. We worked through 6, 7. I had my list. It was soon after that, I don't know, I was at Ravinia at a concert. And I was like, how am I ever going to make amends to my boss who I embezzled like over 10 grand? I have no idea how much it was. And guess what? I was at this concert, and I look over, and there he is. What do? You make a mess. When it's presented in front of your face, it's there for a reason. So I mustered up all the courage I could get, and I walked over to him. I don't remember the exact words. All I remember are his words, it's water over the dam. And I walked away like there were balloons floating me up. I have no idea. And it was a new freedom. You know, these steps are there so that we experience the joy of living. The joy of living is in the promises. They come after the ninth step. And that was all kind of right in my first year. Now, don't get me wrong. I had, you know, legal issues. I worked out my payback program, let's call it, through my dad. So I was actually paying my dad back, which in and of itself is kind of an amends to him, that I could show responsibility. So those first few years, you know, when my sponsor moved, I started going to mother meetings to try some, just to meet some more people. And I went to the AA or Al-Anon group up in Evanston. Okay, I'm gonna just tell you the story because this is where I get flooded with memories. Well, before every meeting there, they read the tools of recovery. Now, I was on the literature committee a little bit. I helped here and there, and I went to the World Service Conference after that, became the GSR, the delegate, and all of that. That was amazing. But I brought that tools of recovery from Alano Club in Evanston to the conference, and it's now one of our literature pieces out there. That's pretty cool. That makes me feel warm fuzzies. That's where I feel like the spirit works through all of us, you know? So I start to feel useful. And that's something to feel proud of, you know? It's not like me, but it's like spirit working through me. In 1990, I had the best time. I just quit a job, and I had 2 weeks before another job. And I was elected trustee at large, because in my job I had been traveling a bit, and I started to send like newsletters. In fact, I think one of you mentioned, you remember my newsletters. It's the old-fashioned way, like we typed them, and yeah, now you would just like text it or something. But so I started sending these newsletters out to whenever I would travel to, I'd find CA. I can remember this one time going in New Orleans, and the cab driver was like, "You want to go where?" And I was like, "Yeah, this address right here." And it was like, you know, Saturday night, 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock, and it was dark. And he waited for me for a little bit, but I could never find that fellowship when I was in New Orleans. But in 1990, you know, I was just telling Brian this. I was thrust into what we call the PR. Cocaine Anonymous had just hired a PR firm. I was sort of on the PI committee, and the PR firm was a little bit controversial. But so I was by the pool talking with Johnny S. And Johnny S., you're talking about how we need a slogan. Like, Cocaine Anonymous needs a slogan. You know, like in PI, it's like Cocaine Anonymous. We need something, right? And so my idea was, we're here. Like, finally, we went from like 7 meetings a week in Chicago to how many do we have now? I don't even know. Like, over 50 for sure, right? 70. Thank you, Kim. Right. And then all over the world, we're starting to grow, like all over the place, in Europe, and I mean, all over. So we're definitely here. We've arrived. Cocaine Anonymous is here. And then Johnny is like, "Yeah, but you know, we're free. Like, there's a great double meaning there. Like, we can come to meetings, we don't have to pay anything. But it's more than that. It's the freedom. Like, I do not have to go find cocaine. I do not have to hide from myself. I don't have to cover up those feelings of shame and not being enough." Which, by the way, they're still kind of there sometimes, but I don't have to cover them up. I'm free, you know? And so I was like, "Yeah, that one's better. That's good." So he was a speaker that night. And at the end, he said something like, "I want to take a group conscience. We're looking for this slogan. All in favor of, we're here." And I was like, "Yeah, all in favor. We're free." "Yeah." And somebody yelled out, "Put them together." So it's like, we're here and we're free. And that's on our little plastic chip. And that is a cool story. So I'm flooded with these memories of gratitude for Cocaine Anonymous. Somewhere along the line, yeah, I'm gonna do it on time, I'm talking too long. Somewhere along the line too, you know, they say get a home group. So my home group was the Wednesday night Straight and Grateful group. Craig's home group happened to be the same one. We got to be really good friends, and we started going out. And it's also where we got married. And I know. So we've had an amazing journey together. We've had many joys. Our children were born when I had 7 years of sobriety. I don't know how you do it, getting sober with children, because I think you're amazing. I needed to be very selfish and not worry about anything but getting my butt to meetings. And so we have 4 children there now, and some of you have talked to me tonight about, "Wow, how old are they?" We drag them to sobriety countdowns, to World Service Convention since they were really little. Two of them actually went to the conference. I was actually breastfeeding through one of those conferences. So, they remember some of it. But one of my favorite stories is we brought our babysitter with us to the CA Milwaukee Convention one year, and she came in the room for the sobriety countdown, and I turned around and looked at her, and she was bawling. Guess what, folks? If you're not one of us, you don't do that. And sure enough, several years later, I saw her meeting. So you guys can be, take credit for that. So spirit, I want to talk a little bit about that spirit because that, raising four children and staying sober, that was challenging. That is challenging. But I can't go to meetings anymore in the evening. And Cocaine Anonymous is in the meetings. What do you? Right? So I go to daytime meetings. I have to, and I started to rotate out of service all at the same time. It was kind of a crushing blow. But at the same time, Sisters in Sobriety, online CA, saved my butt. They kept me connected to Cocaine Anonymous. And very grateful that I went to my daytime AA groups and found my next sponsor. And she stayed with me for many years. Dear Kate said something to me that I remember on a daily basis. She said, take good care of yourself because no one else will do that for you. We don't get this thing because somebody else does it for us. We have to do the work ourselves. No one else can take the steps for me. I have to make my appointment for my fifth step. Every morning, still to this day, I get down on my knees. I ask for help. God, please help me to stay clean and sober today. I still do it. Help me to remember nothing, absolutely nothing will happen today that together you and I cannot handle. I'm not alone. I'm not alone, ever. And it's been kind of a lonely business in the past 5 years. We've had all these joys of raising our beautiful children and building a home. It was like our dream home, in a way. I mean, it was special, but nothing spectacular. But for us, it was like a miracle, right? We birthed two of our babies at home. I was able to nurse all four of my babies. Like, these are things that were really important to me as a person, as a mother, as a woman. These were important things for me. Well, the last 5 years, my husband got sick, some other things happened, the market crashed, this, that, and the other thing. We lost our home. We filed bankruptcy. I had started a Pilates business, at about the same time as this all started to happen. And all of a sudden, this business that was meant to be kind of the joy of my life, to help me go visit my children in college, all of a sudden turned into, how do we get food on the table? How do we keep the kids in school? And it's not easy with this imminent doom of, where am I going to live? All that stuff came back, like crashing back these past few years. Keep going to meetings. Keep talking to people. Stay sober. And that's the only, and you want to know the first place I went? Brian remembers, I came. I came to the Wednesday night meeting. And I cried. I'm scared. And you're here for me. You're here for me today. Now, some miracles happen. I won't go into all the details. But because of my business, and by the way, in 1988, I chaired the World Service Convention. And I coughed so hard. I was hacking I smoked a lot. I ended up with chronic bronchitis. Coughed so hard, I cracked my rib. So that was another bottom for me. About a year later, I quit smoking through the grace of God and through the 12 steps. It's not easy. It was harder than cocaine, I'll just tell you that. Here I am today. I wake up every morning, I go to my Pilates studio, and guess what I do? I get to help people learn to breathe. This is my life, But that one thing helped me through that whole homeless period. Like, that was a scary period. Like, I got to go to work every day and get out of myself and not worry about what was going to happen and where was I going to live and what we're going to do. And guess what? I got to do it again. I'm scared to death. But let me tell you what happened. One of my students had breast cancer. How could I feel sorry for myself when she's dying? So I would go and help her. One day she says, how's that coming with looking for a home? I said, not too good. It's looking bad. Like any place I looked, it was as much as the stupid mortgage. It just was, I couldn't afford it. And she says, talk to my friend. She might have something for you. So I call her friend. I tell her, we don't look good on paper. I have a sole business. And, you know, she said, why don't you deserve a break? What? Through the grace of God, this foundation that she was president of needed somebody to live in a home, into the home that's attached to a building that they're remodeling into a museum, like restoring into a museum. And we are the caretakers. I'm like, really? That was cool. What's really cool about that? It's a museum. I was an art history major. My husband is a bookseller. I mean, he's a curator now. We take care of this house. We have to mow the lawn and, you know, shovel the snow. And it's awesome. Every morning I wake up, it's like, wow, the grace of God. Spirit is with me. When in the times that are the darkest, Spirit's still there. God is always there. And God is so good. I have to tell myself that right now. Another dark period is feels like it wants to envelop me, and I'm really scared. I won't go into specifics, but I'm holding on. You know, it's one day at a time. That's all we've got. And the joy is in the journey. You know, despite that, the past 5 years, and despite what's going on right now that's really, really scary, I can find gratitude because I'm clean, I'm sober, I'm relatively serene most of the time, and I feel good in my body. You know what I mean? I feel healthy myself. So I know, you know, together, I'm not alone. I can do it. But I do need help. It's going to be scary, and I don't know what the future holds, but there's got to be a blessing in every challenge. You know, so for those of you new, please keep coming back. Those of you who've been around for a while, keep coming back, and I'll be there too. Thanks for listening.